Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Great to be back with you today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I don't know how many thank yous I should issue. Thank you to each and every one of you who participated in our end of the year share campaign over the last couple of days here at Faith Radio Network. So whether or not you listen to this program live on via terrestrial radio on one of our Faith Radio outlets all across the upper Midwest, or whether or not you listen streaming online at myfaithradio.com, or maybe you listen to this program as a podcast, or you listen to it via the Faith Radio app. Like, there's all kinds of ways you might be listening to this program. And if you do, then, gratitude is owed. I mean, assuming you like it, and assuming that if you're listening, you like it. So there you go. Gratitude is owed, and probably financial partnership to the Faith Radio Network. So if you want to participate here at the end of the year in supporting the ministry of My Faith Radio, you can do that by logging on to myfaithradio.com and letting us know that you appreciate what we are doing alongside you, as each and every one of us is seeking to glorify Christ in the world where we live. And that he so loves. So there you go. So welcome to Connecting Faith. Here we try to take the headlines of the day, bring the mind of Christ to bear, and then go out into the world as genuine ambassadors of the King and the Kingdom, bearing faithful witness to who he is. Not just giving people another piece of our mind, but actually seeking to bring the very peace of the mind of Christ to bear on the matters of the day. So because I haven't been with you here on Connecting Faith for the last couple of days, I would like to reach back and do a couple of headlines from just the last couple of days that we would have done if we had been here together. And so I want to lead off with the Michael Cohen sentencing conversation. And I want to do this because I am hoping that you didn't pass over this story in such a way that you felt like, well, you could condemn one side or the other, and then you could just move on. This was a couple of days ago now, but it was literally the headline news on every media outlet yesterday and in all print media across the country. So I happen to be looking at the front page of yesterday's USA Today, where the headline is, and it's the entire top half of the USA Today, is a giant picture of Michael Cohen and his family, and then photographers. And the photographers outnumber these people like, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 to 1. It's pretty incredible. Suffice it to say, nobody is smiling at the cameras. And the headline is The Cohen Case, Blind Loyalty Led Down to Darkness. And there are quotes around blind loyalty and darkness. And those are because those are words that are drawn from Michael Cohen's own testimony at his sentencing hearing. So I want to highlight one of the things that Michael Cohen said, and then one of the things the judge said. And then let us wander around for a moment and see how we might use what the culture is giving us right now to have really honest conversations, not just with ourselves, but with those we love who are around us, about, to whom we attach ourselves and who we actually align with in terms of our moral compass and who we are really following. I want to really seriously consider that for just a moment. So during his sentencing, you will remember that Michael Cohen was one of the personal attorneys for Donald Trump. He's been a longtime personal attorney for Donald Trump. He was a part of the Trump campaign, and he was sentenced on Wednesday to 3 years in prison, and he pleaded guilty in August to a series of crimes, including campaign finance violations and tax evasion. And so he also admitted last month that he lied to Congress in the special counsel Mueller investigation. And so those are the crimes for which he was sentenced. And the sentence is going to be 3 years in prison. And he is due to present himself for that sentence on March the 6th. So he's to surrender for prison on March the 6th. So we'll talk about that and what might happen in the interim as well. Here's what he said. My own weakness was blind loyalty to the man that caused me to choose the path of darkness. Sometimes people refer to faith as blind. Sometimes people refer to loyalty as blind. And you and I certainly know the difference between lightness and dark, or light and darkness. And during this season, when we talk about the one who pierced the darkness, where the light comes into the world, I mean, this is the Gospel of John in the opening chapter, how the light of Christ breaks forth into the darkness of the world. And the darkness, you know, frankly, does not understand it. But the darkness also cannot overcome it. And so conversations about darkness and light are legit in the context of the Michael Cohen sentencing conversation. The other conversation that you could very easily have out of that is loyalty. To whom are you loyal and why? And how far? Would you move down a path of darkness in loyalty to anyone? I wouldn't. I'm just coming straight out and tell you. I'm not going there. Because I am fiercely loyal to the one who is the way and the truth and the life, and I'm going to follow him. And guess what? Jesus is never going to lead you into darkness. That is just not going to happen. Somebody suggests that Jesus is leading you into something that God has already clearly called sin, lying, cheating. I mean, the list is long. That's not a person that is leading you in the way that you should go. That is a person who is leading you in, you know, what Jesus calls the wide path to destruction. That's not the narrow way. So the narrow way is narrow not just because it's narrow in terms of the culture, but, you know, it's narrow in terms of probably who else is traveling on it. There's just lots of folks on what Jesus describes as the wide way of destruction. Okay, so the judge said this, somewhere along the way. Now, remember, if along the way you have walked off of a path of light and into a path of darkness, then the way that the judge is talking about here is already an interesting conversation for us to have. But the judge says, somewhere along the way, Mr. Cohen appears to have lost his moral compass. Having a conversation, particularly with young people, about their moral compass and to what or to whom it is calibrated is absolutely the most interesting conversation I think that any one of us could have out of the Michael Cohen sentencing news. To whom or to what is your moral compass calibrated? I mean, a physical compass that actually, you know, like helps you get where you're going in the physical world, in the physical universe, is calibrated to something called true north. Well, who's your true north? And have you ever actually, like, said that of a person other than Jesus Christ? And if so, let me just go ahead and tell you, you have calibrated your moral compass to a fallen human being. If it's anybody other than Christ, if your moral compass is calibrated to anyone or anything other than Christ, if your moral thinking, if your moral decision-making is calibrated to anyone or anything other than the Word of God, I'm just telling you, you have calibrated that thing inaccurately. It is not going to lead you in the way, which is the way and the truth and the life. It is not going to happen. Cohen said one other thing in his sentencing that I found really extraordinary. He told the judge that he had been in a form of personal and mental incarceration since the day he started working for Donald Trump. And he says, today is the day I'm getting my freedom back. If you've ever read in scripture that confession is good for the soul, if you have ever known anyone who is in personal, mental, or spiritual bondage, then you know that the physical incarceration of prison or the threat of it is not for them as great as the fear of being trapped forever in that kind of relationship. And so, you know, on the one hand, I want to certainly celebrate that confession has clearly and sincerely been good for this individual's soul. I recognize that in our culture, we're still having lots of conversations about the veracity of what everyone is saying in this particular case. And I am not here to adjudicate that matter. I am here to use one person's testimony before a judge to help us take what culture gives us and leverage it for spiritual conversations, because every single one of us, regardless of our worldview, is going to stand one day before a judge who is going to look at our moral compass and look at the way that we chose to walk in this life, and is going to sentence us. And I know that when I stand before that judge on that day, I'm going to stand there covered not in my own righteousness, but in the righteousness of Christ. And I'm going to have him as my advocate. And the accuser is going to have all kinds of nasty things to say, because I'm not sinless either. None of us are. None of us is. I don't know. I'm so bad at choosing which one that is. I do believe I've gotten my whom's and who's correct in this particular segment. And if not, you can email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. All my grammarians out there. Okay, so on this Michael Cohen piece, that's all I'm going to say about it for today. But let me just encourage you to be praying the news and praying for this family, because the concentric circles of pain and grief around this man are significant. And so if you've seen the pictures of his wife and you've seen the pictures of his kids and you've heard about his 83-year-old dad who sat in that courtroom in a wheelchair and said, you know, I'm so dizzy, my entire understanding of the world is now spinning out of control. I want to be praying into their lives the kind of people who walked into the life of Chuck Colson after he was sentenced in the Watergate debacle. And yet in that period of time between his sentencing and when he had to surrender for prison, that is the window of opportunity that evangelical Christians took in the life of Chuck Colson to sit down with him and share with him the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I'm that's what I'm praying for in this window of time between now and March the 6th, when Michael Cohen has to present himself for prison. I'm praying for the same kind of evangelical Christians to walk into his life and the life of his family that walked into the life of Chuck Colson. If you don't know the story of Chuck Colson, that would be a good one to revisit in this season. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to bring you up to date on the Satanist snakeativity situation. And then we're also going to join in the renewed call for prayer for Jamie Kloss in Barron, Wisconsin. All right, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Hey friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I'll just admit, sometimes this season, I just like to listen to the music. And so I'm thankful for all of those songwriters and recording artists out there who give us such just fantastic reason to turn our radios on this time of year. I just want to, a little shout out of appreciation for each and every one of them. Okay, so I think we've talked about, in fact, I know we have, we talked about in Illinois this snakeativity display, this snakeativity statue, which says, "Knowledge is the greatest gift," and it features a woman's hand surrounded by a snake holding an apple. It is, it's not called black, it's called another word for black, but it's basically black. And earlier this month, it was placed next to the nativity scene in the Illinois State Capitol Rotunda by a group of Satanists who, are acknowledging that, hey, if it's legit for Christians to be setting out nativity scenes and Jews to be setting out menorahs, then it's legit for the worshipers of Satan to set out a snakeativity. And I got to tell you now, because, I think that, Christians, somehow we've been trained to like be at war with the culture. And so we've been trained to be outraged at such things. Here's the reality. If they can't have their thing, we can't have ours. I mean, like, so freedom of religion and freedom of religious expression actually is for everybody. Even those people who are doing things religiously that you know are false and you therefore think ought not have a place in the public square. Here's the reality. We now live in a Christian country. Certainly we live in a country based on Christian ideals and Christian principles, but we do not live in a country that has one state religion. We just don't. We live in a country where people can choose to have a religion or no religion at all and have the right to freely express that religion everywhere all the time. So here is how I would prefer that Christians respond to the snakeativity display, as opposed to the way that some members of the Illinois legislature are responding, which is with angry letters to the Secretary of State condemning adherence to the rules, which basically says that, people ought to be able to have these celebrations and recognized observances of religious holidays. These representatives are saying this is just a provocation. This display, this snakeativity display, seeks to provoke and antagonize members of the Jewish and Christian faith. So here's what I would encourage the members of the Illinois legislature to do instead. Christianity is true. Christ is real. And we can compete in a marketplace of ideas where, in order to acknowledge this literal demon who these people serve and venerate, in order to acknowledge that creature, they have to appeal to scriptural images. There's a reason it's a woman's hand holding an apple coiled up by a snake, because you actually have to go to the Bible in Genesis chapter 3 to find that story. So the Satanists have created a something that, yes, I recognize is designed to be antagonistic towards Christians and Jews. I get that. But they've designed something that actually points people to ultimately what you and I know is the greatest gift and the knowledge of it, which is the revelation of God coming in the person of Jesus Christ. This is the greatest gift of knowledge that there is. It's not the knowledge that comes by discovering that which is evil and the eating of the fruit in the Garden of Eden. That's not how the knowledge of good comes. All we get with that is the knowledge of evil, and that's not attractive. That's not winsome. When people read the story in Genesis 3, which is where they'll have to go to understand this woman's hand holding an apple coiled up by a snake, when they go there, they're going to ask questions, and who's going to be standing there to answer the questions that they have about the Bible? It's going to be us. It's going to be you and me. We're going to be standing there, and we're going to be worshiping the living God who comes in the person of Jesus Christ in this beautiful nativity scene that's next to the snakeativity scene. And let me tell you, the nativity scene of Jesus Christ is way more winsome and beautiful and awe-inspiring and actually seductive to the human heart than is this grotesque snakeativity display. We can compete with that, and we ought to be prepared. We ought to be prepared to understand the Genesis 3 story in such a way that we help people see Jesus in it. He's right there. He is the one who is promised. He's going to be the seed of the woman that ultimately crushes the what? The serpent's head. When is that promise of God made to humanity in Genesis 3 actually fulfilled? It's fulfilled at Christmas. The snakeativity display actually belongs next to the nativity display. We ought to have a snake in the crush, because that's the one whom Christ has come to crush. All right, I know. I went to preaching. Let me gather myself back up here. I've got one more story to bring you up to date on before I move to my conversation with Becky Kaiser and her book, Sacred Holidays, Less Chaos, More Jesus, which I'm utterly looking forward to, because I need less chaos and more Jesus this Christmas. But let me bring you up to date on the story of Jamie Close. Jamie, you will remember, is a Wisconsin girl, Barron, Wisconsin. She was kidnapped after her parents were murdered. This took place now 2 months ago. And so last night there was a gathering in Barron, Wisconsin, around the Christmas tree in the center of town. And it was adorned with messages of hope for her safe return. So let me just read the paragraph here from the Associated Press. Hundreds of people attended a gathering Wednesday evening in Barron to light a tree of hope for 13-year-old Jamie Close. The middle school student has not been seen since before her parents, James and Denise, were found fatally shot in their home on October 15th. Her uncle Mike is quoted here as saying, "We just pray every day. We just hope for her safe return." And so let me encourage you to renew your prayers for Jamie and for her safe return. Let me encourage you to renew her image in your mind. Like, go and Google her name, J-A-Y-M-E, last name Close, C-L-O-S-S. Google it so that you can have her picture in your mind this holiday season, because authorities are still looking for her. And if you have ever had a child go missing, even for a few minutes in the mall or a few minutes at Disney World, you know the desperate anxiety of not knowing where a child is. And her extended family actually horrifyingly knows that whoever took her, you know, killed her parents as a part of her kidnapping. And so let us have not just renewed prayers, but renewed vigilance. I want us to be looking for her. You know, while you're at it, you know, consider being on the lookout for the thousands of kids in America who are missing. As we celebrate Christmas, as we think about why Jesus came, and he came as the one, as the Savior who would seek and save the lost, we got a lot of not just spiritually lost people, but we have a lot of people whom, in terms of the world's economy, are like actually unaccounted for. Like, we don't know where they are. And so let us renew our prayers to the Lord our God and say, you know, you are the great finder of all who are lost. And it would be, Father, such grace. It would be such grace this Christmas for this young woman to be found safe and to be reunited with her extended family, who love her and who are certainly seeking that reunion. Let's be praying for the kids at Riverview Middle School. Let's be praying for the town of Barron, Wisconsin. And let's be praying ardently, ardently for Jamie Close, that God would not only be protecting and preserving her, but making himself very evidently real and present with her wherever it is that she finds herself in this very moment. Friends, when we return from the break here at the bottom of the hour, I am going to be in a conversation with Becky Kaiser about her book, Sacred Holidays, Less Chaos, More Jesus. So next up, right here on Connecting Faith, Becky Kaiser. I'm Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Joining me now for conversation is Becky Kaiser. She and I are going to be talking about her book, Sacred Holidays, Less Chaos, More Jesus. Becky is intent that women would fall in love with God's word and then feel equipped and empowered to live it out. She believes that women can live out their own wild story, just like the ones that we see in his word. That we can be lovers of Jesus in every way that that the women of the Bible demonstrate their love for him as well. Becky is the founder and CEO of Sacred Holidays. It's a ministry dedicated to helping women find less chaos and more Jesus during holidays through Bible study, community resources, and lots of fun. So she's determined to help women keep all the whimsy of the holidays, but make them sacred, holy, and set apart. And she now has a book by the same title, Sacred Holidays, Less Chaos, More Jesus. Becky Kaiser, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Carmen. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Well, I'm thrilled to talk with you. I need what you are sharing with us, and I know a lot of other women who need it too. Let me go ahead and tell them that I have books available. And so if you are interested in a copy of Sacred Holidays, you can text me at 877-933-2484 or email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. So, Becky, let's start with this. Why do we need a book and or an organization to help us sort of return the sacred to our holidays?
I don't think it's that we necessarily need more information, because hello, Pinterest has offered us everything we could possibly want and need. What I felt, what my friends felt, and what women as I would travel for speaking would hear again and again is, I simply don't know where to start, or even I know how to make them whimsical and I know how to make them fun, but I don't know how to make them sacred, and I don't know how to merge the whimsy of my childhood with this faith that is so central to everything that I stand for. And so for me, as I was talking to other people, I was like, let's just put it all in one resource where you have a book that you can grab that walks you through each holiday. And so the intent is that it's more of a resource even than it is a book, and that you just pick it up and it gives you some ideas to get you started, to help you get the right frame of mind. But then there's also spots in it for you to journal in, like, hey, this works really, really well. I want to make sure I do this next year. Or this was a terrible idea. I don't ever want to do it again. And then also ideas that you hear other people share on social media or as you're talking to friends, where you just, it's kind of like, to me, I have this analogy for it where it's almost like your grandmother's recipe cards that just gets better with time as you add and tweak and change it. And so,
okay, it's so funny that you say that, because I actually like wish this were a recipe box that had sections with the little holiday tabs, and it had like a little stack of cards behind that. And then so for Valentine's Day, I can go and I can like pull out my little recipe cards that are in that, and, you know, and I can whip up a genuinely sacred holiday.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to give you a commission on the next product that comes out then.
Okay, so let's talk about the fact that it does cover an entire range of holidays, like everything from New Year's Eve and Valentine's Day, Lent, Easter, Halloween, Thanksgiving, even happy birthday. But since it's literally 10 days before Christmas, I think if you and I could focus in on, let's bring some clarity to why we celebrate Christmas, and then let's move into some of the really fun hows.
Yes, let's do it.
To go right ahead. Why
as a Christian, and you were just talking some about the garden and Jesus, and we should celebrate Christmas because this is the day, like in the Bible, they had waited for and waited for and waited for. So the culmination, when you step into the gospel narratives in Luke 1 and 2, as you see that it was coming and it was here, you get to step into the anticipation. That's Advent, is just the coming, the anticipation of Jesus's arrival, of his life here, the promised one had finally come. And so for us, that's why I love Advent, which is the days leading up to Christmas, and Lent, which are the days leading up to Easter, so much, because for us, we should be celebrating this. I mean, this is actually the history of Christmas, is we're celebrating that Jesus has come. And so for Christians, I think we don't really know, how do we incorporate that into our everyday lives? What does that look like? But should we celebrate it? You know, I don't like to get too legalistic on anything, but I think all of our lives should be centered around pursuing Christ. And I think anyone listening to this show wants their faith to be connected to every part of their life. And so we can use those holidays to help cultivate even more connection with Jesus. And so that's why I love Advent has been, it used to be a time where I'd turn into like the 13-year-old version of myself and I'd be like, why? Or I'd stand at that Christmas Eve service and just be like, I missed him. I totally missed him. And so it's just switching that frame of mind, even if you're 10 days, and we are 10 days out from Christmas, of saying, okay, I'm going to hit reset today. I have already lost my mind more than 5 times. Or I was talking to a girlfriend today and she was like, I just kind of like, I haven't even decorated my tree yet. I haven't wrapped a single present. I just want to skip. She was talking to her husband, like, I just want to skip Christmas. And I think a lot of women are probably in one of those two states right now of like overwhelmed, or I just want to skip it, or you're so caught up in it, you're forgetting this is a celebration of Jesus's coming. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can change that just by making a few changes today.
Well, and I like the observation that you make in chapter 9, which is the chapter on Advent and Christmas. This is actually like why a lot of people pick up the book, even though this is technically, you know, sort of the last holiday season of the year. Mm-hmm. It's actually the first in, you know, in the Christmas year, year, if we want to think about it that way. But it's also the one maybe that we most easily recognize gets disconnected and sanctified instead of sanctified. And so I would love to talk about Santa, because last week we talked a little bit about Santa here, because there's a psychologist who's now telling all of us that if we, if we participate in the Santa story at all, then we're lying to our kids, and that's just, destructive to them. Restore the whimsy and the joy of, of what this holiday season can be, and then also help us keep it sanctified.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to Santa, I always answer this one with so much both hesitation and tenderness, because Santa's like a very personal thing to try to persuade people on one direction or another. And I think what I want anyone listening today, whatever camp you're in or whatever tension you're at in between, I don't personally, now I'm not a psychologist, I don't see, as I've researched and played around with it as a parent myself, I don't see that there's a right or a wrong way to do this. For me, it was never about lying to my kids, because let's be honest, I lie to my kids sometimes when it's like, there's not a clock in a room. Oh, look, it's bedtime. So there are times that I think we and my girls, we play mermaids and all kinds of things. So that to me wasn't as big of an issue. I know for some it is, and that's the reason they don't do it. And I think that's wonderful. For me, it was simply, I couldn't build up the story. So we personally don't do Santa. But I have so many friends who do Santa. They love Jesus. Their kids love Jesus. But I know there's not a lot of people talking about not doing Santa. So I'll sit in that camp for a little bit. For me, it was simply that I couldn't put into all the effort that I'd want to put into Santa, of sprinkling glitter in the front yard and all the other buildup and all that stuff, and try to train my kids year by year, building more and more on how do we fixate and celebrate Jesus and love others well during this holiday. For me, I really struggled with doing both well. And so we just opted on, we're going to do a little social experiment, because I also didn't want my kids to like, I feel like people live in the magic of the holidays when it's contingent on somebody in their family believing in Jesus. And once everybody stops believing, it's like a little slump. And then grandkids come in the picture and it gets exciting again. And then you go right back into the slump. And I wanted my girls to know, listen, it can be magical regardless of a man in a red hat. And it could be even more significant year after year after year.
So I love the really specific hows in this chapter. Let me remind people that I'm talking with Becky Kaiser. We are talking about Sacred Holidays, which is a book, but she also has an organization by exact same title. So she, you can follow her on Twitter at Sacred Holidays or at Becky Kaiser. And we have books available from the publisher to give away today. So if you would like to enter a drawing for one of the copies of Sacred Holidays, which, trust me, is a great resource throughout the year, not just for Christmas. So if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't get it now because then I got the pressure to use it before Christmas. No. It's got a New Year's thing, and then it's got a Valentine's Day focus, and on and on and on. So this is a great resource book to use throughout the year. to equip you as a woman to help restore the sacred to the holidays. They were always intended to be holy days set apart. And we have set them apart in our culture, but often we have not set them apart for God, for His glory, and for our edification. And so that's really what Becky is focused on equipping us to do. And so if you'd like a copy of the book, you can text me at 877-933-2484, or you can always email me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. So, Becky, I think that when you say, gosh, there's just no way I could have done, I can't do Santa and Elf on the Shelf and everybody else and do Jesus well at Christmas. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's probably folks who are hearing that and they're like, well, why? Because, I mean, isn't Jesus just Christmas Eve and, you know, once and done and that's it?
Right. Yeah.
So help people, you know, like you guys do Advent candles, you have specific ornaments that you focus on. You go to church throughout the season, not just on the night. You act out the Christmas story. Help us imagine some of those things.
Yeah. And let me say too, this whole Advent thing is for anyone, whether you have kids in your life or not, because really it started because I wanted my kids to have a deeply meaningful Christmas experience. But what the Lord did initially was say, listen, Becky, this is your heart first. And just like the flight attendant says to put on your oxygen mask on the airplane, I need you to do that as you walk with me as well. And I was trying to get it to be meaningful for my kids and I was suffocating. And so the number one thing you can do is to study God's word during Advent. So you could do an Advent study, which even though we're 10 days away, you could still go get a Sacred Holidays Advent study or one at your local bookstore, or we have one on YouVersion as well, the Bible app. Find something and go ahead now today, choose to step into God's word. Maybe you just study and read through Luke 1 and 2. Just start studying God's word. So as you fixate your heart first, then you start incorporating that with those who you live in community with, whether you have kids or coworkers or neighbors. But yeah, for my kids, I couldn't live in that tension of trying to intentionally teach them the gospel narrative, which starts in the garden, like you were talking about earlier, and goes all the way through the Old Testament prophecies and then stepping into the Christmas narrative of looking at each of those characters. And I just simply couldn't build up, you know, because Santa isn't just the one night. It is every time you go to the store, it's like, oh, we'll put that, or we'll tell Santa you want that this year. You better be nice because the elf is watching. And I simply just didn't want to play into those games. I didn't want to bribe my kids to behave well or have this whole season fixated on what am I going to open up on that day. And I wanted their heart. I want my heart to be just about giving to others as Jesus came as a gift for us, and celebrating his coming in my personal time studying God's word. And then as a family, as listen, Carmen, it is so not perfect. Like I have ideas in here, but I mean, we have children melting down. We have timeouts happening. We've had accidents, like all kinds of things when we try to do these things as a family, but we're not giving up. We're going to keep finding what works for us as a family.
So I've aggregated some of the things that we do in what I call my Merry Intentional Christmas List. And so I've been posting them on the blog for the show, and people have been responding like, okay, seriously, do you do that? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, we actually do. and so then I'll run into people and they're like, oh, I have a Merry Intentional Christmas idea. And so I feel like there's a lot of folks out there who have these kinds of ideas. They're doing these things with their families. I met a woman in Wichita just over the last couple of days who shared that they put up a stocking intentionally for Jesus. And and it doesn't matter how old you are, how old or young, everybody gets a slip of paper. And on that slip of paper, they write down their gift to Jesus and they put it in the stocking and nobody else ever reads it. So she's now been doing this for like decades. So that stocking is stuffed full of these tiny little slips of paper that nobody other than God has ever read.
I have tears in my eyes and goosebumps on my arm.
And so they're now in the whole next generation, right? And she's like going to pass the stocking along to the, you know, right? And they're just going to keep stuffing it full of all. And you can't give. I mean, she said, like, you know, you get to the place with little kids where you're like, okay, no, you can't give him a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
You can't give him. You can't give him your blankie. That's super sacrificial, but you can't give him your blankie.
Yeah.
What can you give Jesus? And they're like, I can give him, you know, you can see how that provokes them to think about the non-tangible things that each and every one of us is called to give to Christ. And for her, I mean, you know, she even talked about how, you know, you move through when your kids are little, they're excited and they want to do it. You move through the teenage years and your kids are rolling their eyes at you. Are we still doing this? Mm-hmm. You got to be kidding me. We're still doing this. And then as young adults, you know, they all still did it. Now that they have kids again, mm-hmm. everybody loves it again, right? And so she's like, sometimes you just have to persevere. You just have to stick with it. These, you know, committing to these rhythms is really, really important.
Yes.
Friends, again, I'm talking with Becky Kaiser. The book and the organization are called Sacred Holidays. You can follow her on Twitter at Sacred Holidays or at Becky Kaiser. We do have copies of the book. Thank you to Amy in Roseville. And let me click over here on the email. And Janet in Duluth, who have already registered to receive a copy of the book. You can text me at 877-933-2484, or you can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Becky, the part of the book, another part of the book that I really love is the common mm-hmm. struggle section. Can we, yeah. I know we're a little over time, but do you have one more minute to talk with us about
the common struggle section?
I'll
talk to you as long as you want to. I'm still doing it.
Great. Let's talk, you know what, then let's take a 1 minute break and let's come back and let's talk about the common struggle section because I just love that.
I think people will need to hear that.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, friends. Yeah. Hey, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, here today with Becky Kaiser. We're talking about sacred holidays and we'll be right back. Hey friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am joined in conversation today by Becky Kaiser. She and I are talking about her book and frankly, the movement of Sacred Holidays. You can follow her on Twitter at Becky Kaiser or at Sacred Holidays. And the book is Sacred Holidays, Less Chaos, More Jesus. And I do have copies available if you want to text me, 877-933-2484 or email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Again, Becky, thank you so much for being with us today.
I've loved it. We've had such a great time talking. So many good ideas.
I know, so much fun. Okay, so let's talk about the common struggles portion of the book, because in addition to helping us sort of re-sanctify each one of these holidays and holiday seasons, you also deal with some of these very practical realities in our lives. So talk with us about the common struggle section.
Yeah. As I was writing the book, I realized, you know, it's not that we just need ideas, because as we said at the top of the show, like we have ideas, we need a place to consolidate them and plan for them. But the thing that trips us up the most is those common struggles, things like how to not be that Christian, realistic expectations, conflict and drama, budgets, plans, and grief. And when we don't address that, we will never get to the sacred, holy, and set apart holidays, because those are the things that are tripping us up. Those are the things like what you were talking about earlier, the snake, the things Satan will use to tempt us to steal, kill, and destroy our holidays from us. And when we actively work through these is when we find abundant life through our holidays.
Okay, so when you say how to not be that Christian, mm-hmm. it's possible you're talking about me. So who is that Christian that I don't want to be?
Mm-hmm. So I classify two different types of Christians. I think there are those who would err on the side of being a little bit too legalistic. You've lost the joy of it and the trying so hard to be holy. You've lost the joy and the love and the relationship with Jesus. On the flip side, I think within my generation, we've become those Christians in the aspect of we're too relevant. We're trying to be all things and so approachable and open-minded that we have lost the celebration and the sacredness of Jesus and worshiping him. So I kind of think there's two camps of those Christians, in my opinion.
Okay. And then realistic expectations. And I've already confessed to you that this is a really important, really important portion of the book for me. So talk with us about the common struggle of expectations.
Yeah. So this is the chapter that people are like, this was worth the whole book. I tell people, I'm like, really? It was like 3 years of counseling that got me to write that chapter. So I'm saving you thousands of dollars by reading just this one chapter. And what it boiled down to is I had a counselor there. Was a certain family member I was really, really struggling with. And she looked at me and she said, Becky, you are expecting an unhealthy person to behave in a healthy way, and they're not capable of doing that. And it was like, whoa. And so she helped coach me of, okay, let's have some realistic expectations for this person. What can you expect from their relationship? And you enter into every interaction with them or conversation with them with that mindset of what they're actually capable of bringing to the table relationally. Then as Christians, because as Christians, we kind of struggle with that. Like, shouldn't we have faith that it could be the best and they're awesome and Christmas could be amazing and all these things. And we want to bring our faith into it. And we do with a realistic expectation of, but God, I believe you can do anything, but help me in knowing that this is who they are today. And so we approach that with realistic expectations for yourself. Like, what can you realistically afford to buy over the next 10 days? And do only that. What can you realistically expect from the family members that you're going to be surrounded by or those that you're not going to be surrounded by? And I simply just list out all the people I'm going to be around before we go into the holidays. Actually, my husband and I sit down together too, because we often travel. We both come from divorced homes and we just kind of dialogue with one another. Okay, what are some things that usually trip us up? How can I give you alone time, or how can I make sure you have some time to spend with the Lord before, or what's some code words we can have? Like, so setting up those realistic expectations beforehand will be such a game changer for you. I completely promise.
So, we have somebody in the 218 listening area. I don't exactly know where that is, but she's got kids ranging, from it's where in Minnesota, Ted, you can just tell us.
Northern Minnesota. Yep.
Fantastic. So, so one of our friends listening, up in Northern Minnesota, she's got four kids ranging from 22 to 8, and she just confesses, look, I'm sometimes at a loss to keep Christ in the center of all that we do. And so, you know, I think that you are, Becky, you are speaking to the concerns that so many of us experience. Yeah. Like, we don't just want Christmas to be this wonderful celebration of the birth of Jesus.
Right.
We really do want that of other holidays as well, in terms of actually finding the sacred and restoring them to holiness. But Christmas seems to be the one that we just fall so easily into the total commercialization and the wear me out kind of rhythm. So one of the things that let's encourage people to do this, let's encourage people find some time apart and some holy space during this season as well.
Yeah.
So friends, my conversation partner has been Becky Kaiser. You can find her. What's the Sacred Holidays website, Becky?
Just sacredholidays.com. And we hang out a bunch on Instagram and Facebook, even more than Twitter. So if you just search Sacred Holidays on Instagram and Facebook, you'll find us. Same Becky Kaiser, K-I-S-E-R. And then Amazon and Lifeway, Target, all the places you can get it online.
I love it. And we've got copies. So if you want to enter the drawing for the copies we have, which, you know, a lot of folks are doing, which I love, you can text us at 877-933-2484. And you can email me at carmen@myfaithradio.com. Becky Kaiser, what a joy. Thank you so much for the book. I think we should have you back during another holiday season to revisit this topic.
Let's make this our little sacred tradition that we talk before each of the holidays to get everybody ready.
Let's totally do it. I'm definitely thinking people are already interested in how do we make Valentine's Day sacred.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely. Like,
ideas.
You know,
yes.
God is love, but love is not God. Absolutely. Hey, Becky Kaiser, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking today, Carmen.
Likewise. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right, friends, let's just make a quick connecting point here at the very end of the show. This entire segment has been a connecting point. I hope you have experienced it in that way. I continue to post some of my Merry Intentional Christmas ideas on the Connecting Faith page at myfaithradio.com. So last week we talked about being intentionally present. We talked about intentionally calling to mind the inbreaking of light as we hang our Christmas lights. We talked about intentionally calling to mind the tree on Calvary as we were putting up our tree, intentionally playing with joy and all of those things. So today, let me just say, I'm posting another list, five more, to intentionally consider the full arc of God's redemptive history. And then to be really intentional as you open your Christmas cards, intentionally breaking the seal on every envelope, calling to mind the one who was sealed in the tomb. It didn't remain there. Like, it's an opportunity to talk about Easter at Christmas. Intentionally pray as you address and send your own Christmas cards, which I have not done yet. Intentionally listen and intentionally sing Christmas carols and Christmas songs. Oh Holy Night happens to be my very favorite. Intentionally seek and find someone to bless. I think that is one that is definitely not just in the Christmas spirit, but also in the spirit of Christmas that's in the world. And so gives us an opportunity to help people genuinely reconnect the eternal with the everyday. That's what we're trying to do every day here on Connecting Faith. Thank you for joining us in it. You can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. You can find me on Facebook, Reconnect with Carmen, also online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. Friends, here on this Friday. It's Friday. Friends, have a wonderful weekend. I'll see you right back here on Monday. Have a great weekend and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.